This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. Today we're going to review 1917 for you. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Straight into it then for this war film from director Sam Mendes, who also co-wrote it along with Christy Wilson-Cairns. It stars George McKay, Dean Charles Chapman, Mark Strong, Andrew Scott, Richard Madden, Colin Firth, and Benedict Cumberbatch. It was cinematography, very important to mention, was from Roger Deakins, Academy Award winner. The budget was $90 million, and it only just opened worldwide here in Australia and the US wide on the 10th of January. It had a limited release on December 25th in order to qualify for this upcoming Oscar season with the Oscar nominations just announced.
So it's not a wide release in the States?
It is now, but it wasn't initially.
Just to get into the
which time, is why the box office is only $16.7 million thus far. And although we are recording at a point when you know all the Oscar nominations, and I'm pretty confident this film will be nominated for Best Picture, It has not. We are recording just before that, so not any confirmation of that as of yet. Wayne, What is this bad boy about?
On the 6th of April 1917, that was like 3 years into World War One, there were these two British soldiers in northern France, Schofield and Blake. They get summoned to a meeting, and they're basically told that they have this little mission where those two alone have to get all the way to like the Devonshire Regiment and stop an attack of 1,600 troops that are going to go over the wall, and they think they're going to attack retreating Germans, but the Germans actually have wicked artillery, and the whole thing is a trap. So these guys have to go there, deliver an order saying, call off the attack. Mm-hmm. Pretty much that's the movie, but it's way more than that.
All right then, so getting impression already, Wayne. Well, what did you think of 1917?
Oh boy, this is the Birdman of war movies. This is like, once again, I walked into this film knowing nothing about it. All I knew was that, assumed from the trailer that was from the title that it was a World War One film, and then I knew Mendes directed it, and I didn't even see a trailer. So I didn't know anything about it. So walked in, and I didn't know about the long shots.
Didn't you?
I didn't know about anything about the long shots. Damn. I'm sitting there watching it going, holy shit, this is a 14-minute at least scene at this moment, and it's still going, and it's just them walking around the trenches, and I'm like, shit, that's immediately dazzling. Now, I think we all know, Paul, I think everyone knows, how we feel about long tracking shots.
Well, yes, okay? And if you don't, you're about to find out.
Exactly. It is the thing. Basically, Snake Eyes was good for that reason only.
No, Snake Eyes had one redeeming feature, and it was that.
Okay, fine. Oh, yeah, you're right. That's closer to the truth. So that's one thing. So usually we do this here, but in this movie, that is the feature. The format is the feature of the film, and it's just, I don't know, engulfs it. I was sitting there going dazzled the whole time. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. There are sort of slowdown bits in this movie, even though it's mostly very intense and just engaging.
Agreed, yeah.
But it's got good dialogue. It's got great performances. It feels, to me, surreal. It's because it's like this hellscape of a war that's happening, it doesn't seem quite the same. I don't know. I love it. What did you think?
I thought long and hard about how to encapsulate my reaction. Ultimately, right. I have.
Yes! Yep. I knew it would be this. Please go on as if you need to.
1917 is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
1917 is the best cinematic experience I've had since Mad Max Fury Road, and arguably, possibly, even better in terms of spectacle, in terms of being completely engrossed by what was being depicted on screen.
Absolutely.
And unlike you, I knew the gimmick. I knew that this was presented as basically one uninterrupted take.
There's only one really jump cut.
There is one jump cut in the film. So really, it's two uninterrupted takes.
Yeah.
It's presented that way, although there, of course, is trickery to hide bits and pieces.
Apparently, absolutely.
Quite a few 8 and 9 minute shots in the film. Mm. That's about the lengthiest of them from what I've read.
Cool.
The cinematography by Roger Deakins defies verbal description.
Yep, no doubt.
If he hadn't won for Blade Runner 2049 2 years ago, he would be such a lock for the best cinematographer this year in the Academy Awards that it wouldn't even be funny. I reckon he'll still win, and I hope he still does, because nothing has come close to this. Nothing.
How long did they have to set up these shots for? And weeks and months, surely.
You got a $90 million budgeted film where the only name actors in it are in it for maybe half a day, perhaps as much as a day's worth of shooting.
So yeah.
The very minuscule part of the budget would have gone to them.
Yep.
Everything is in the technical side. The two leads are, well, did you know this? One of them is Tommen.
From Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Which one?
Blake.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit!
I didn't realize that until afterwards myself. But
neither did I. To me, there were two unknowns.
He was very familiar, but I couldn't place where he was.
It was an odd choice, that dude, as well. Because he's far from the heroic-looking
very chubby, sort of funny, you know.
I like him, you know? But that's not heroic.
And Schofield, the other guy, was the reluctant kind of tag-along. And I thought that dynamic was very good.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that they're not recognizable actors
absolutely
adds to the film, because you don't know whether they're going to be successful.
Exactly, and there's no expectation, and that was it's hard to say this, right? Because it's such a risk to have two no names in the lead, right? And well, virtually no names, but you see why he did it. It's the same reason they chose Hugh Jackman for Wolverine, because at the time the director wanted an unknown, which he was then. So this is cool.
Oh, it's amazing. And I can't speak highly enough about how good the film looks. The way almost every single time in this two-hour film, I went, geez, it'd be cool if the camera went there. It did.
Yep.
There's a scene where they're crossing No Man's Land. It's not a big spoiler. Of course, they're going to have to go across there at some point.
Yep.
And they go down to this huge crater.
Yes, I know exactly the shot you're talking about.
This pool of stagnant water with lots of bodies in it. And they go around it. The camera just glides across the top.
How does it? I was sitting there when it happened. I actually went, ooh, like this, yep. Right? And because when they're walking around and the camera seems to going to follow them, but then it doesn't. It starts panning over this stagnant water, which isn't moving. Mm-hmm. So how the fuck did they do that? It's not a steady cam. It could be a crane, but it's the best crane in the
world.
Cannot
wait to watch the behind the scenes to see how they did it.
And then they actually
took combinations of steady cams and big, long, huge, long arms.
Well, the thing is, after they got around to the other side, the camera follows them back up and through and over. So what the fuck were they using?
Yep.
It had to be a steady cam on a crane that he stepped off or something.
Could have been.
God damn, man.
It's so impressive. And then later in the film, sort of the first half's basically day, the second half's basically night. Mm-hmm. Half might be a slight exaggeration, but the lighting in those scenes at night, like the cinema I was in, which wasn't packed. Yeah. It was well attended, but it wasn't packed. I'd say 2/3 full.
Mine was 10:30 a.m. on a Saturday, so no one was there.
All right.
Just me.
It was dead silence. Everyone was just stunned. And I didn't want to look away from the screen to look around to see the faces of the people near me. I just wanted to keep, I was riveted to the
mm-hmm.
screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. This film is simplistic in plot. Yes, I will acknowledge that. And I've read some criticisms.
That's fine, man. That is fine if it's well done.
I've read this criticism saying, oh, it draws too much attention to itself, the filmmaking.
I've heard that too.
It completely undermines what it's trying to achieve by doing. I'm like, fuck off. Fuck all of that.
Bullshit. Okay, look. Yes, the stylistic contrivance gives you a perspective from the camera where everything is put in place. It looks less realistic because everything has to cue on time, all right? You might be able to argue that. I don't care. I fucking loved it so much. He can do that more if I want, like if he wants. That's the shit.
Sam Mendes did that really long shot to start Spectre. And it kind of feels like...
Oh, God, that was good. Wasn't that good?
Best part of the film.
Fucking great.
I was cutting his teeth sort of ahead of this. And he was the one that went to his co-writer and said, hey, I've got this idea for this war film and I want to do it this way. And everyone's like, you're mad.
Really?
You're fucking mad. Yeah. What are you thinking? He's like, nah, let's do it. And the result is absolutely stupendous.
This is a director here, okay? Because Sam Mendes, I've heard about this, and he does some interviews in the Bond films. And they were saying, Sam's like, he had to learn to shout on the James Bond set because you can't just call up to an actor after a shot and say, listen, we want to do it this way and do that. You can't do that. You just got to yell it.
Right.
And he was saying that the one thing they said, Sam does not quit until you get the shot. If we don't get the shot, we're not going home. And he says, I don't care what I pay you. I'm getting the fucking shot. And unless I'm happy, it's not on.
Cool.
It's not over. And so that's why this thing is so high.
Well, here's the results. The results right here. There were two, I'll talk about it in spoilers, which we'll come to in a moment.
Yeah.
This film maybe jumped more than any film I can think of in recent memory.
Really? So engrossed were you?
Two occasions I almost leapt out of my seat. And that's the point. The tension in this film is so ramped up by this experience, by putting you there. The camera swirls and twirls and goes between them and around them and behind them at all the right moments. And you feel like you're part of this.
You are in that scene.
Yep.
That's the shit.
In this film. Like, you're right there with these two guys.
You know what? This is a little bit arty-farty, but there's a painter called Hieronymus Bosch, who's famous for like hellscapes with this kind of color palette, with this sort of like brown color palette. That's what this film seems like to me. This is almost because of the hellishness of war and the fucking pestilence and the flies and the horses and all this sort of shit that's fucked up, right? It just feels like hell to me. So it feels a little bit surreal. That's why I was noticing only after the movie. I was sitting there going, you know what? I think it feels like I've woke up from a dream a little bit.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool.
For me, this is the highest possible recommendation. That's what I'll say to end up this non-spoiler section.
So opening with a bang, 2020 for you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and for you, I'm assuming it's a hard recommendation as well.
Oh, yeah.
Dude. And I'm really pleased that you didn't dislike it because I thought, boy, we were going to... There would have been a huge... It would have been war in here.
Absolutely.
If you hadn't liked this movie.
Change the movie to 2020.
I'm going to see this again.
Are you?
Yeah, my fiancé's expressed interest. I'm like, cool, let's go.
Man, you know what? I'll say something else about this movie, right? So we talked about the technical shit about it all, right? Mm-hmm. There's something that you should know is that the actual performances, right? Like the two leads are immediately immensely likable and there's barely any backstory. So it's a little bit like Dunkirk where it's all about now. It's all about right now.
There's more characterization in this film than there is in Dunkirk.
I would say so. I agree. But I would also, what is cool about the entire movie is that there's no grandstanding. There's no rousing. Look, it's kind of a hopelessness movie, a little bit.
The emphasis is on the futility of war.
Exactly.
And I mean, that's the reality of this world war, that hundreds of thousands, if not millions of lives were lost over relatively meters of ground.
Oh, yeah. And the way it's played as well, any humanity on display is just immediately bludgeoned. It's just fuck, that happened, you know? And it's it's just fitting given the actual movie itself. But that's why it's so cool. It was, I don't know, I found it interesting even... You know, I don't like fucking unpleasant shit on the screen, but it entertained me still, and I wanted to see what happened next.
It was unpleasant, but I don't think it wasn't glorifying in gore. No, Saving Private Ryan is a far more visceral film in that way.
Oh, yeah.
Hacksaw Ridge has a lot more blood and guts than this film. So when it's shown, I think it's shown with a certain level of restraint. There's no over-the-topness, limbs aren't blown apart.
Oh, yeah, sorry, it's not the gore of war, it's just the... It's more the smashing of hope rather than you know what I mean.
I got your going. I was just saying that for me.
I agree though. You're absolutely good point. Good point. Yeah. So I mean,
all right, there we are. Big recommendation. We've gone on about on the non-spoiler side. I think we've done pretty well. And this is a film you can talk around about because there's so much of the technical side.
Tons.
Let's on the other side of this spoiler warning talk a little bit about the developments in the film, which is noteworthy as well. All right, now we're going to spoil developments in 1917. If you haven't seen it, please switch off.
Really don't, because you don't want to know this shit. Just know that it's the bomb movie and you got to go see it. Word.
And there are two big things that happen we can talk about, and one of which completely caught me off guard.
I didn't expect it at all.
We're, 55 minutes into mm-hmm. the two-hour film, mm-hmm. not even quite halfway, and Blake dies.
Yep.
And I was pretty certain one of them was going to die, because for two reasons. Mm. One, it made sense in the narrative that two of them go off, not both of them make it. You don't need both of them to make it. And two, I'd seen the trailer, which has that shot of the dude running a lot with explosions of...
Oh, really? I hadn't seen the trailer.
...of artillery around him, and it was only one of them. And I'm like, well, what's happened to the other guy?
Oh, you're the plotomatic. Yeah, good call.
So I was expecting... But if you had to put my money on it, I would have had my money on Blake being the one that survived.
Of course. He's the biggest star, now that we know that.
That Schofield would have died to save him at some point after Blake rescued him.
Because he almost did that time.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Blake saved Schofield's life in that moment. And then, that shot where the plane crashes into the barn was so amazing.
Dude.
Holy shit.
That was dope.
And then he gets... You see him die on screen because he takes 5 minutes to bleed out. But him actually getting stabbed doesn't even happen on screen.
No, because... No, Schofield. And that's probably how it really happens. There's not this sudden moment where you see something, you're like, oh, what the fuck's developing here? Shit, I gotta shoot that guy. Bang, wait, he got stabbed? Fuck, no, it's over. Yep. It's like, Jesus. Yeah, that's why it is. It's visceral, man. It isn't that visceral, but it's pretty visceral.
You know, that was like, oh, damn, this film is...
Because it feels like it really happened.
Yeah.
And you were there. So that's why it's this shit.
And I liked the bit when he runs into Mark Strong, his character, and he gives him the warning when they part ways, and he says, just be aware, the general who's leading that charge... He's a bit of a glory hound.
That's right.
In effect, and
he just
may
wants
not
the
listen.
Fight.
So make sure you got witnesses when you tell him, oh, that's a whole other thing again.
And it didn't really play out though, did it?
No, well, it didn't. In the end, he did stand down, which happens at the end of the film. The other part, which is that, and this ends up being a little bit of clever juxtapositional casting.
Yeah.
So Blake's brother, whom Schofield eventually does meet at the very end of the film in mm-hmm. the final scene.
Rob Stark.
Is Rob Stark.
Yes.
Also from Game of Thrones.
That.
Yeah.
But then again, I didn't know the first guy was Game of Thrones. So there you go.
So that was quite interesting.
No, it's really cool. And also, Rob Stark's got this little performance there where he basically has to find out that his brother died.
Has to react to it,
And he's just, his British stiff upper lip is just, I don't know. I love this. I like British people, man. I just like watching British people because they're so stoic and proud and I have this great accent. And even though they're like larrikin or whatever, the soldiers in the rough, they're still kind of polite.
Well, with the exception of, I think, Andrew Scott's character, so Moriarty from the Sherlock Holmes series.
Oh, he's great. Yeah,
he was really cool. He brought some real life to that sort of world-weary soldier.
Yeah, he was.
Right on the precipice there on the edge of the war, of the front, and it's like, well, it's your funeral. Go over the top if you
exactly.
want.
Exactly. He's like, I hate losing these flares to the Jerry. Yeah. You know, can you throw it back over if you die? Like, fucking legend.
That was great. I think having Benedict Cumberbatch be the general was great. I was just everything about this movie
works.
There you
go, two Sherlock people.
Sorry, there you go. Sherlock person, okay. I think everything about it works. The two bits I jumped at was in the German bunker.
Yep.
And the rat drops to the floor. Yep. And like, oh, no. And then it actually exploded. I was like, holy fucking shit.
The fucking tripwire. Yep. That was fucking huge. Which means that could have happened at any time. But yep. Yeah, I know. It's
that was awesome. And then the other bit was when Schofield's climbing across the bridge, across the blown up bridge. And suddenly there's a shot which pings and he's on the middle of this.
Oh, yeah.
That may be the leap of a million miles as well.
Another realistic thing, because I imagine, not that I know, but if you're getting shot at, it just appears. You're not like, you weren't expecting it. It's not telegraphed because you saw someone
the
in the
music
background.
Doesn't telegraph.
The bang was fucking shit.
It was just bang, boom. And then he's like, because he's got no choice. He's got to keep moving. He stands still. He's dead.
And then he takes out the sniper by literally just kind of jumping up and shooting. Like, and I'm like, that actually is your only option. The only option, the other thing is like, wait for him to run out of bullets and then you can fuck off and get some other cover. I don't know. Like,
and he didn't know how many of them were up there, but I guess he figured out there was only sort of one that's been left there to guard the bridge. And
yeah, that was, oh, fuck. Yeah, this is harsh. This is
astounding.
Really, really good show, man. Really good show. Anything.
That's all I want to say in the spoilers about. Because, I mean, obviously, Schofield gets there. Benedict Cumberbatch's general listens and the attack gets called back. Although the first wave went, so however many hundreds of people died. Yeah,
but
he
saved most of the company.
Yes. And that's great. And then I think it ends perfectly. The film opens on he and Blake, and he's leaning against a tree with his eyes closed, trying to get some shut eye.
That's right.
And he lays against this single tree, which is, you know, you talk about hope being bludgeoned in this film. I think that tree's meant to be kind of symbolic of hope. Like, he gets to it. He gets to sit down. He gets to rest.
Well, in the end, he did actually succeed.
Yes.
So, like, he did sort of, like, so yes, that is as close as you get to don't burst into tears as you walk out kind of thing. So, which is fine with me. But basically, look, everything you've seen in a war film is here, but never quite like this. This is a new take on everything and you can't miss it.
Yeah, absolutely. This will be the hardest I've campaigned internally and indeed, if anyone asks me, externally for a film to win the Best Picture since Mad Max Fury Road.
So early
and
that turned up.
And that was irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like, Mad Max Fury Road was never going to win the Best Picture. This has a chance. In this wide open year, this has a legitimate chance. It just depends how well it does at the box office. If it makes a bit of money, that will give it a lot more voting kind of cred as well.
I mean, yeah. So when it opens for real, and
it now has, but we'll sort of see how it tracks.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yep. Definitely. What's your score?
Well, my final thoughts are: this is as close to perfection as a film can be. If we were counting this as a 2019 release, it would take every other film on my top 10 of the year and wipe its ass with them.
Really?
And discard them like shat on paper.
Yes.
That's how much better this film is than anything we saw in 2019 for me.
It's like they were waiting for 2020 to start just to fuck with you.
my hope for 2020, and this would have been on my most anticipated of the year had we not seen it before we
recorded.
Absolutely,
I've got one like that.
So I'm so stoked that this film has kicked off 2020, relatively speaking, with a bang. And I'm hopeful, much more hopeful than I was at any stage in 2019, thanks to this film. 1917 is as close to perfection as I said as it can be. I'm giving this a 93 on a first viewing.
Holy shit! Is this the biggest you've... Is this as big as it gets?
It's pretty close to.
93!
Yeah. I don't give
a fuck. That's more than me! I was going 90. I thought you'd be like 90. Well, I mean, fuck, and it's good at 71.
Well, what we actually mean is that it once again proves you are.
I don't think you can call me Megatron. Especially with a fucking voice I can't understand because of some bullshit filter.
I think that is the highest we've ever scored a film together.
Yeah, man. Oh, shit. I think it is.
91.5.
Damn.
Coming up in 5 years of this show, there it is. As high a recommendation this podcast can give, this could very easily be another 5-star film for me after a second or third viewing.
So it really sounds like it.
I've got to let it grow into that film.
Okay. All right. So, see how it's going.
There it is from us, 1917. See it. Don't dawdle at all. Please let it make enough money so we can win. We can all be proud of an Academy Award winner
for
a change.
Catch it in the theater. Get that big screen going. Get that sound. The sound is excellent, by the way.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that. The sound design is wonderful. The score is very good, too.
Totally.
Incredible film across the board. Sam Mendes and Roger Deakins. Take a bow, gentlemen. That is it for this week. If you want to let us know whether you got it right, God, I hope you're going to say that, and not wrong. You can hit us up on Twitter at TheCountdownPC, via email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Podbean, where we host the show. Check out the Facebook listener community link is in the show note, where we interact with our listeners. and finally ccradio.com.au for us and a bunch of other great Australian shows. That's it from us. Thanks so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this film should win the absolute best picture of the year.
I stand resolute, motherfucker.
We will catch you next time.
See you.
Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. Today we are going to...
Sorry, cunt.
I don't know why.
That's why we can't do a live video show.